Hi, Small Subjects listeners. We want to hear from you. Click on the link on the blog where we post photos from each episode, www.boxdioramas.com/smallsubjects, or on our social media posts, and comment on anything we've said in this or any episode, or pose a question you'd like to hear us answer.
There's no time limit, but please try to focus your comments because we'd love to include them in full on the show. Thanks.
Welcome to Small Subjects, big ideas about miniatures and modeling. I'm Jim DeRogatis in Chicago.
And I'm Barry Biediger in Salt Lake City.
How you doing, Barry?
Not too bad. How are you doing?
I've had a hard week. I've been looking forward to our taping, though.
Yeah, me too. I haven't had nearly as hard a week as you have, but sounds like things are probably calming down for you a little bit.
Well, a little bit. We shall see at the end of this damn trial. I'm not on trial, and I didn't have to testify. The First Amendment held. But, boy, talk about Twilight Zone. Yeah. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. What we're going to talk about is an idea that you and I had for our occasional episode where we just go back
and forth. It was
your idea.
This is definitely your idea.
All right. It was my idea. Yeah. And, I mean, we talk, you know, once or twice a week, and we have these conversations all the time, and people seem to enjoy when we have a conversation once in a while that's just you and me.
They
and
seem
I
to.
Decided, yeah, people seem to, we get great feedback. And I wanted to discuss a really basic idea, tools we can't live without.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, I don't know if there's going to be anything to talk about. And I'm like, we never don't have anything to talk about.
Yeah, I just don't know that we'll give anybody any new ideas that they don't already know about, but who knows?
Well, who knows? And also, there's that twinge of recognition when people say, I do that, or I use that. And also, as always, we are throwing this open to our listenership. We're paying for this Telby program. The link is on the blog for each episode. And when you're the king of social media, when you social, as the kids say, each new episode, we have the link in there. And perhaps there are tools. I know there are tools I don't know about. You know every tool, every manufacturer, every modeler, every sculptor in the world. Your exhaustive knowledge always amazes me. But I bet. This is a listener challenge, okay? Mm. Leave us a voice message with a tool Barry hasn't heard of, used, or thought about.
I would love to hear something I haven't heard about, but I'm hoping that I don't just disappoint everybody.
Oh, you're not gonna. You're not gonna. So, Lee, because you've never disappointed me, I've learned about more stuff than I can even count from you. But the first item on your list is a really basic one.
So we're just going to go right through the items now, huh?
Okay. Yeah, let's just go right through the items. Well, you got more to say as a preamble?
No, I guess not.
No, so, imagine the two of us at our workbenches, and we're looking there and looking down and talking about the things we always reach for first and most often.
Okay, so get into character is what you're saying. Okay, hold on. Well, okay, I know this sounds really basic, but I kind of have a reason to talk about this, not just the simple idea of the X-Acto that everybody knows about.
Yeah.
Any list of basic modeling tools, one of the first things is going to be an X-Acto knife or a modeling knife, right? Craft
yes.
knife.
Yes.
And of course, you got the number 11 blade, which is what most people use.
Absolutely standard.
First thing I was going to mention is something some people might not realize is really handy is the number 12 blade, which is the curved blade. I don't know if you use those, but those
are... You name an X-Acto blade and I got it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I have probably most of them as well, but most of the types I've just kept in a drawer and never used.
Yeah, same with me.
But there's three types I've used quite a bit, and the number 12 is that the small curved one, and it's incredibly handy to get to tight places when you need to scrape some detail off, or like if you're doing plastic modeling, little knockout pins in tight places, or in figures, you know, cleaning up figures, it's very handy. And also sculpting, it's great for carving. It's one of my favorite carving tools.
I like the number 12 as well. I have also one of those super big curved blades that you have to put in the red-handled X-Acto.
Yeah, yeah. Is that, which, do you find that useful? Or?
Yeah, if you're carving wood, or I do a lot with that Durafoam, no longer manufactured.
The balsa foam.
Balsa foam, the balsa foam. AK is making it again, thank goodness. And I stock up on 12 packs at a time from Last Calvary. Mm-hmm. He has a lot of it, Dave Youngquist. And I just love that stuff. So carving that's very helpful, the bigger ones. I guess people would use it for wood carving.
Yeah, I think that's the original purpose for that one. Some of those bigger knife blades. Another one that's very handy is the chisel. Mm-hmm. The chisel, which is the number 17, I think. No, that's the number 16. And the number 17 is one that has limited use, but it's the more steep edged number 11 like blade. You know, the straight edge. And that's handy for cutting out like masks or tape in certain shapes or whatever.
I've been doing a box diorama. I don't think it'll be ready for the Chicago show in October, but I've been working with a lot of Hysterex parts again. I find that one you're talking about very helpful, because often the tiniest, frailest Hysterex part is attached to the sprue. Mm-hmm. And with that bigger, flatter blade, I can just go right in and snip it off.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's very handy.
So are you an X-Acto guy, not an XL guy?
Well, I actually prefer, for number 11 blades, I prefer XL. And actually, my favorite handle is the XL handle, too. So I guess I am an XL guy, now that you mention it. Mm. The one that tightens at the heel instead of up by the blade.
Oh.
Do you know the one I'm talking about?
I haven't tried that one. No, I have not tried that one.
You'll be the only one that can see
you
this.
You are there at your workbench, and you can illustrate. This is great.
You tighten it back here?
Oh, yeah. We're going to put pictures on the blog.
And actually, this is an X-Acto. Yeah. X-Acto does have a type of this, but the one I'm more familiar with is the XL one. But the ones that tighten up by the blade, they really come loose way too easy. They suck.
I am occasionally frustrated by, after a period of use, and I haven't been able to nail down how long, you know, the top tightening X-Acto no longer gets super tight.
Right. Yeah.
Then I got to buy a new one. I'll tell you though, I think the brass tipped ones at the top X-Acto are better than the steel colored ones.
Brass tip top. So the actual part that holds the blade is brass. That makes sense because it's softer, so it probably doesn't, it probably grips a little better with the
actual blade holder's not brass, but the tightener part is.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering if the tightener kind of digs into it a little bit. I don't know.
You have the scientific mind. I have no idea why it's better. I've just noticed it's better. Mm-hmm. You know, the number of blades I've tried of different shapes and handles and tapers and you name it, that one you just showed me had not only tightened at the bottom, had a little thing there so it wouldn't roll.
Right. Yeah, that's critical. Yeah. You have to. On all of my knives, I have something that will keep it from rolling.
Yeah, I've experienced the old X-Acto barely missing my foot when it rolled off the desk. I have noticed I prefer the X-Acto handle most of all. All the others I've tried are now relegated. You're going to talk about putties later. Enduro green stuff you need to cut away, cut a little ball out, right, or scrape a ball up. Yeah. I have one for the green and one for the yellow, so the two do not mix. I've got more knives that are just for, like, trash use than anything else.
Well, I have, just counting my knives here, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, just right here out on the desk here. with different blades of different ages, mostly just number 11 blades that are new and old and whatever to cut putty or whatever I need to do.
I save the old ones in a little cup for putty because you don't need to ruin a brand new one. And, you know, I mean, this has been said by everyone who's ever written about basic modeling tools. You can't change that blade often enough.
No. Although I will keep it till it's way too dull, just because it's my nature to conserve as much as possible.
I get lazy about it. I'll give you a tip, though. My Blick here in Chicago, so you can buy the number 11s any number of ways with the little magnetic case or just a pack of 100 of them. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at the price, and it's astounding. It's $50 or $60 for the carbide steel super blades, number 11s.
The blue ones, yeah.
Yeah. But they do last longer. They keep their sharpness, and the tip doesn't. You know, you go to drill a little pinhole or start a hole that you're going to widen with your pin vise, and you break the tip every time you do it. Not with those super steel ones. It's worth the money.
Yeah. No, they're really good. And also, as you mentioned, the XL blades, their number 11 blades are a little bit stouter, a little bit more sturdy. Mm. But I have something I was going to mention later.
Yeah.
As far as drilling holes. Now let's talk about it later. I want to keep the suspense. All right, we'll talk about it. So speaking of blades, though, let me just mention something. A lot of people will say, why are you messing around with X-Acto knives? Because they prefer the surgical scalpels.
Oh.
Have you ever used those?
I have the scars to prove it.
Yeah. Well,
I have never tried one of those where I haven't sliced a finger open. And I would say a close number two on the list to the knife is the handy box of Band-Aids right on your workbench.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's a good point. They creep me out more than anything.
Yeah.
Surgical scalpels just kind of creep me out. I probably should try them. They scare me the way the regular Swan Morton clip into the handle. That kind of gives me the creeps, and it seems like you got to be careful, you know, or you're going to slice yourself open, but I don't know.
With you. I never throw away anything tool-related because I figure there'll be some use for it, but I got rid of my Swan Morton. I, didn't even want it in the house.
Yeah, I'll bet a lot of people would disagree with us on that or have a problem with that, but I welcome them. I might try to get over it and try it, but it just kind of gives me the whim-whams.
No, the third time I cut it and bled all over what I was working on. And it's a special color. If you're working with white plastic Hysterex or any styrene or anything, you know, that blood never comes out. You got three coats of primer to cover it.
Yeah, I like to reduce the amount of blood.
I don't like blood. I got the Band-Aids handy. I don't like having to seal my cut with super glue, although, field dressing, Vietnam. Yeah, we all know that story.
Yep.
I don't like to bleed. You know, I so don't like to bleed. I even, on the last trip to Joann Fabric, bought a set of those fingertip covers.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, hard metal, like a thumb cover, and then there's index finger, right?
A thimble?
Well, it's not quite a thimble. It's more like a ring, but it only goes over the tip of your finger.
Oh, like a guitar slide?
Yeah, kind of like a guitar slide,
I could just wear my guitar slides. That's actually a good idea. I won't be able to move my hands at all, but...
Well, you can't do really, really delicate, you know, like I said, I've been trying to clear the seam lines off a little 1/30th Hysterex scale metals and stuff, right? You know, you're not going to be able to use that. But if you're hacking away with the old number 17 at balsa foam, good idea.
Yeah. You know, since you mentioned cleaning seams off of stuff, one thing I forgot about is, I don't know if you've seen the little ceramic scrapers.
No. Look at that.
It's a ceramic blade. Yeah. This is made by U-Star. That's the first one. I'm sure other places make them now, but they're, it's like the ceramic like they make kitchen knives with.
Huh.
And it's fairly sharp, but it's easier to scrape seams off of plastic without it chattering.
Wow.
Without That's getting good. The
or kind gouging. Of
the,
yeah.
Or gouging. But mostly it just I think what's happening, I don't want to get, you know, mention too much science and be shot down and people make fun of me.
No, that's why we love you.
I think what happens is, so steel has some flex and it will kind of microscopically bend, I guess, and chatter a little bit. But the ceramic is so rigid, it's easier to just kind of scrape along the line without getting those, you know, chatter marks. All
right, tool number one that Jim now has to investigate. Yeah. Okay. There's nothing worse than the seam. I had Joe Burton over here the other day, and he's looking at, I mean, I have 6 or 8 figures done for this diorama, and a million Hysterex accessories, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he found the one-eighth inch tall, it's a little medicine bottle, and I'd missed a seam. That's the first thing he says is, you missed a seam, right?
He should join IPMS.
He was right. I mean, there it is. I mean, I don't know how I missed it.
I'm sure he was right, but I mean, they can use his skills in spotting seams.
Yeah, Joe hates to judge, though, and he hates to judge even under the open system. I think he would kill someone, and he's the sweetest man in the world, but he would kill someone under IPMS rules.
I wouldn't want to see Joe judge under... Yeah, I was not going to even mention this stuff in this episode, but, you know, oh well.
Well, I'm still scarred by my trip to Omaha, so I don't care.
Well, there were fun parts, though.
There were fun parts. The people were the fun. All right, so are you done with your first item?
I think so, but I was just going to mention one other thing. As time goes on, the more I agree with Joe about judging and awards and stuff. So I think it's going to be me and Joe sitting around in the hospitality suite bitching about stuff.
Well, you help me in the back room of MMSI as I try to wrangle some sense out of it.
I don't mind doing that, but yeah.
Yeah. All right. We got to talk about the Rio Rondo Scrapers as a whole other entry. But first, I don't get it.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry. I thought you were going
to... You were the one who said you'd have nothing to talk about on this episode.
I'm sorry. You're going to skip past one thing that I was going to mention.
Okay, go ahead. So don't let me cut you off. I just thought you were going to talk about one, and then I'd talk about one, and then you'd... But you're all fired up. I love it.
Just since we were talking about scalpels and how they creep us both out...
They do.
One of my favorite tools is, I think, a medical scalpel. It's not quite like the Swan Morton, but it's the little miniature blades from Micromark. I'm sure you can get them elsewhere. They're actually made by a medical blade company. I can't remember the company.
They're like 1/8 of an inch wide, if that.
Tiny. The two I like to use are a little chisel sometimes, but the main one is a little tiny curved blade. And the handle is really nice from Micromark. I don't know if you can get them elsewhere, but I mean, usually with Micromark, you can buy the real thing for about a quarter of the price because they just, right?
Yeah. And some of those Micromark things are as good as the brand name at a quarter of the price. And some of them, you open the box and use them once and then they're done.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is a great buy.
I bought crap from Micromark. That is good. And you turned me on to that.
And I use those all the time.
All right. Well, I want to come back to the last item you had under knives.
I'll let you say something. I'll let you get a word in now.
I'm so excited. I'm so glad that you're having fun with this. toothpicks. Talk about your obvious, even more obvious than X-Acto knives. Now, I have become an aficionado of the proper toothpick, right? I think it's Diamond makes the ones I like. They have a nice width in the middle. They have good points on each end. You can get the fancy cocktail-like toothpicks, and those are losers because there's only one end. And I don't, you don't need the fancy part between your fingers. You can get the really cheap toothpicks, which are kind of squared at the end and, rounded off oval at the other end. I buy these Diamond toothpicks. And I use them to apply glue. I've got all those fancy. I've tried all of those fancy glue applicators, the metal ones. Mm-hmm. There's one other thing I use for glue, and I'll get to it later. But and I'm talking super glue. I'm talking white glue. I'm talking you name it. Not plastic glue. Mm-hmm. But I can't live without my toothpicks. I was down to a mere 25 or 30. I don't know how this happened. I always have like 6 boxes, you know? And it was like, oh my God, I literally had a panic attack. I couldn't wait for Sunday grocery run to go buy 3 or 4 more boxes. Mm-hmm. Keep them in a little shot glass. Now, I prefer, we're going to talk about some sculpting tools. And we've tried fancy ones. We've tried ones from the medical world. When I was a kid, I used to, I had many part-time jobs to fund my addictions, buying models and buying drums, right? And I worked at a dentist's office down the block in Jersey City, and I would clean up, sweep a couple times a week and go in and take out their trash and also, shovel in the winter. So they were always throwing out dental tools. I had a stash of a million of them. And then I was doing such a good job for the dentist office that the business next door hired me to do them, too. Mm-hmm. It was a funeral parlor.
Mm-hmm.
The tools that came out of the mortician's basement, right? Mm-hmm. And I collected a bunch of them. I mean, they were just going in the trash. But like the Morton Swan scalpel, I didn't want to think about where it had been before it was on my workbench.
Yeah.
Those are all gone. But anyway, I was going to say there's lots of fancy tools to use for sculpting. We're going to mention some that are handy. But Bill Horan, the toothpick. You take one of those good toothpicks and you kind of blunt and round out the one end. And the other end of the toothpick, you make even pointier than it was. These will not last unless you coat them in super glue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
2, 3, 4 times, right? Yeah. You want a nice thick coat. I mean, you put a lot on, and then you can always sand it slightly, but it permeates the wood and it makes it hard.
The problem I have with toothpicks for sculpting is you can easily replace them, but when you're in the middle of sculpting something and you've lost that tiny little toothpick, I don't want to take even 2, 3, 4, or 5 minutes to make one.
Oh, I've always got 6 or 8 prepped.
Okay, well, that's and I mean, look at Bill Horan's results too. So and others use toothpicks.
We'll talk about another sculpting tool or three.
The type of toothpicks though you're talking about specifically are the diamond ones that are square and then rounded at the ends, or are they the ones that are totally round?
No, they're both pointy at the ends.
But square in the middle or round?
No, not square in the middle. It's round in the middle.
Okay. All right. Cool.
I'll put some pictures on the blog of the customized.
No. I'd like to see them exactly.
The great Bill Ottinger of Hysterex modeling fame did a seminar a couple of years ago for the MMSI in Chicago, and he was espousing the benefits of toothpicks. But he was also saying there's some sort of chemical reaction when you coat with cyanoacrylate wood.
Really?
It releases a gas, and he warned us about that.
Really? I've never heard this.
Yeah, I just figure, all the putty I've swallowed, all the fumes I've inhaled, my lack of a paint booth who knows what it is that's going to get me eventually, but
that's interesting. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I remember that. All right, you go to your number 2.
I wasn't really done with toothpicks, but that's okay.
Oh, all right. What else do you have to say? You told me you're going to have to do all the talking. I got nothing to say about tools.
Well, I was just going to say that, as you mentioned, and I was just going to reiterate and agree with you more,
All right. It
really does pay to buy the high-quality ones.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Because over
it's $1.50 a box,
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you go to places and they'll have these displays with the toothpick dispenser.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Made in China. And, they're like bamboo or something weird, and they're all...
Yeah.
misshapen and different sizes and splinters, and they're also not, they have a different amount of absorbency, so they don't pick glue up the same way. It really does pay to get the diamond toothpicks.
Absolutely.
Can we get them to pay us some money for?
It'd be nice if Small Subjects had a sponsor, wouldn't it?
Diamond toothpicks.
Let's investigate. You know, people don't realize we are on Zoom, so we can see each other as we tape this audio podcast. So, you know, as we proceed down our list, of which you have nothing to say about, except you do, you know, if you'd like to add, just like raise your hand and I won't interrupt you again.
Oh, should I raise my hand? Or just interrupt you? I thought you preferred if I just interrupted you. But
maybe listeners get annoyed by that. I don't know. I don't intend to talk over you, but
I'll raise my hand next time.
You were so, just give me the middle finger. I don't care. I won't take it personally. I just, you know, you said this is your idea. I don't know if I have anything to say, but I knew you would.
All right. All right.
Are you at number two on your list yet?
Number one was
general knives. Number one for me was toothpicks.
Yeah. So the next thing on my list was the Rio Rondo carbide scrapers.
You introduced me to those, and they changed my life.
Mm, yeah, they're fantastic for who was it? Was it Taesung Harms that was talking about when he sculpts, he gets the basic shape in, and then he carves the rest of the way.
Yes, I think that's
what he said.
And he was a big champion of carving.
Yeah, and I'm nowhere near the level of him as far as sculpting, but that's the way I like to sculpt, is get the basic shape in with the wet putty and then come back and carve it when it's set. And these things, these Rio Rondo carbide scrapers are indispensable for that. They are fantastic for carving. They come in, what, six different shapes?
Yeah, six different little tips that fit into something that looks like an X-Acto blade, but it's a round receptacle.
Yeah,
and it pays. X-Acto handle, yeah.
And it pays to get the set. We'll add a link to it, to get the set with the handles for each type, so you don't have to keep switching them out. But they're a little spendy, but, you know, if you're going to spend $80 for a bust or a model kit, I think spending close to $100 for tools that will last you for decades is worth it.
Well, carbide, these things are indestructible, and they really get into tight places. They're wonderful. You know, you turned me on to them 5 or 6 years ago. I've yet to blunt the first tip I've tried, you know. Yeah. And what's more, they came from a really good site for people who sculpt horses.
Yeah,
primarily.
They sculpt horses, and I think it's also the people who do those briar horses.
Yeah.
We met a couple of those people, or at least one person, at World Expo in Chicago.
Yeah, we did.
But it's a serious hobby, and I didn't know about that as a hobby until I saw that somebody recommended this site to me.
And they have great tools.
Yeah. But for what we're doing, carving epoxy putty, yeah, I'm sure that if you were carving metal with it, I'm sure they would wear, but
yeah.
I haven't seen any noticeable wear in the, what, close to 15 years I've had them after carving epoxy putty.
No, they're absolutely a great tool. And, you know, I will say, Ray Taesung, and your comment about carving, I mean, you know, it's really where the hobby began, because the idea of two-part epoxy putty didn't come in until 10 or 15 years and into the hobby, you know, 60s into 70s. A lot of those guys early on, even some of the sculptors for Valiant, right, would laminate together sheets of styrene until they had a big enough block in which was hidden the figure, and then the whole thing was carved.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like traditional, good old school sculpting.
Michelangelo, big block of marble.
Yeah. I can't believe how much Shep sculpted with Squadron Green putty.
Oh, my God. I've never been able to use that stuff to do anything.
There's no reason to even try to sculpt with that stuff. And I don't know when epoxy putty started becoming popular. I think Bill Merkline might have been one of the first.
Milliput at first was
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Yeah, I started seeing in the 80s a lot of the British sculptors talking about Milliput.
Yeah.
But then I think it was Bill Horan that was the one I first saw really using it a lot, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Well,
that brings us to the putty section of the list you sent me.
Yeah. So it's my turn next again, huh? I get two in a row?
I talked about toothpicks.
I know. And then I talked about the Rio Rondo scrapers, but that's okay. I can talk about epoxy.
Oh, well, all right. I'll talk about another one, and then you will get to putty. Okay. Medical swabs.
Yeah. Now,
I am a sloppier modeler than you. I'm always spilling glue or forgetting to wipe my brush when I'm painting, and then the big drop of water comes off the brush and ruins what it. I'm always cleaning something up. Now, the problem with your standard Q-tip swab is so we're dropping brand names. Somebody ought to sponsor us. It's the problem with your standard swab is it sheds.
Mm-hmm.
And now, in addition to the sloppiness you had to clean up, you got to pick out those little hairs from the cotton, right?
Yeah.
But the medical swab, and I got this idea from, the COVID tests were all taken.
yeah.
But they're nice and compact, yet absorbent, and they don't shed. And you can find them on Amazon, either from like drugstore type sites or Blick has them, and they cost more. But boy, again, it's one of those what you spend is you get something in return.
So they're the ones with the wooden handle, you say, and the
wooden handle. Okay. Yeah, wooden handle and that tight, compact cotton swab at the top.
Mm. Yeah, those they are noticeably different, and that kind of reminds me also of the Tamiya ones. Have you used those?
No.
They have a couple different sizes. That's what's really nice about them. And they have really tiny pointed ones. They're kind of expensive, and I don't know if you can get them elsewhere that don't have the Tamiya brand name on them, but they last too, so they're not that bad. But they're really nice to get into tight spots.
They're worth having. Absolutely.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right, your turn.
Okay. So is it time to talk about epoxy putty then?
Well, yeah. See, what I was doing was making an audible. I know nothing about sports, but I think that's when they...
Sorry.
I don't know. But we were at putty, and now we're going back to putty. But that's
all
quite
right.
Okay.
You're
now,
right.
Now we're at your putty insights are now welcome.
Okay.
Embraced, even.
So there's so many different types of epoxy putty, and everybody has their favorites, of course, but the ones I can't live without.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is the fast setting plumber's putty, which you can just get at the hardware store. It sets up in 5 minutes. It doesn't set completely solid in 5 minutes, but it will set to where you can't sculpt it anymore within 5 minutes. And then within an hour or two, it's completely solid. But
the great Bill Merkline turned you on to that.
Actually,
yeah?
No, this is something that John Rosengrant mentioned to me.
Okay.
To solidify the pose. So once you have used your wire and your your resin chest and pelvis pieces, you can use this to solidify the pose and use as the basis to put the other putty on top of. So then you aren't, messing around with all this wet putty for a long period of time. It just sets right up and you're ready to go within an hour.
What's a brand name?
Yeah, actually the one I have right here is just Ace brand from Ace Hardware.
Huh.
And it's just called Epoxy Putty. And it's quick setting. It just says epoxy putty, but it's generally gray, kind of a steel color.
Okay.
And
is it two part?
Or it is just two part. It's a tube with the two parts that you slice a piece off, and it will set up within, like I said, within minutes, and be solid enough that you can sculpt on top of it within minutes.
Well, that's fantastic, because the number of times with other putties, and we're going to talk about some. Our other favorites, that I've set the left leg, perfected the left leg, and then have moved on to the right and then screwed up the left,
mm-hmm.
because the regular putties take an hour or two or more. Yeah, that's great. I can see that. You get the exact right pose with the wire mannequin, mm-hmm. and then you just want it to instantly set.
Yeah.
And good one. All right, I got two things: ceramic scraper and fast setting plumber's buddy so far.
Okay. So the stuff you talked about with Bill Merkline that he uses is called Plumber Seal.
Mm.
And you have to buy it in bulk. That's the only way I've seen it recently. And so you have to share it with friends or put it in the freezer for years or something. But the advantage of that is it takes as long as regular epoxy putty, I believe, to set. But the advantage of it is extremely carvable. It's pretty hard. It's nice for carving because it doesn't scrape away too easily.
Yeah.
But even more than that, more important than that is when you have to layer putty, like you carve the basis of a face and then you're going to put a nose on it, right?
Right, right.
It's difficult sometimes to keep the putty sticking to the first layer, mm-hmm. and it'll flake off.
Yeah.
Plumber Seal is difficult to make flake off. It sticks to itself after the first layer is set better than anything I've ever seen. So if you're having problems with that, Plumber Seal is the thing to try.
All right, except you got to buy a tub of it.
Yeah, and so we probably should get some people together and go in and buy a case of it. But
you've been promising to send me some, but...
Did I?
Yeah.
I will send you some.
All right. You can bring it when you come to the Chicago show.
That's right. I'll be out there.
Now, the commercially available, hugely popular, especially in the, the garage kit sculpting world and the mini sculpting world, Aves or Magisculpt?
Mm-hmm. I really like Magisculpt, but the problem I've had with a couple of batches is it's just not as consistent as what I've seen with Aves.
Mm.
I really like the natural Magisculpt. In England, in Britain, it's Magisculpt, I think.
Mm.
And it's the same exact thing. The latest batch I got was really soft and it doesn't set as well unless you heat set it. It's a little bit, I don't know. It's just a little bit flimsy. It's not as good as the earlier stuff.
I don't want to get weird, but I've had identical containers of the two parts of Aves or Magisculpt. I like them both kind of equally. Mm-hmm. You have one that you've been using for 6 months and then you have a new one and sometimes you open the new one and it's acting completely different than the old one.
Yeah. Have you noticed that with Aves too? Is that the case with
Aves? I have with both. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I've even once opened two new sets of Aves and they still behave differently. And I am very careful about, measuring out a pea-sized equal part A, part B. There's something mystical about putty.
You don't generally have to be that careful about getting the mixes perfect. You can get slightly different ranges or slightly different percentages of each, and it'll still set up okay. But and it's not that. That's not what I'm noticing. Same as you. But I've had the same tub of the Aves White, which is kind of similar to white Milliput, not exactly, but it does smooth with water a little bit easier than the natural Magisculpt, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And so since I've had that same tub, I haven't noticed any difference, of course. So
you live in that, bone dry desert.
Mm-hmm.
And, the humidity in Chicago is all over the map, so.
Yeah. Do you think that actually helps?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I can sit down and use the same two tubs and mix a batch of putty, and sometimes it's not doing a damn thing I want it to do. I get frustrated. I throw it in the garbage can. You should see my garbage can. It's a tin garbage can with all these little lumps of putty stuck on the bottom that will never be unstuck. But and then I'll start anew, go out, take a break, come back, start anew 20 minutes later, and everything works like a charm. I just don't know. There's something, you know, putty. And look, I mean, it's part of the fun, right? You know, I like to be surprised and have happy accidents. And I get frustrated. And then when I get frustrated, throw something away and start over.
Yeah. And you're saying that the mixes maybe do play more of a part, the amount you're mixing? Or you think...
Yeah. I've long since learned not to mix a ton at a time.
Oh, right, because, right, yeah.
You know, but also...
But you know, if you do mix too much, you know what you can do, though. I didn't raise my hand there. I should have raised my hand, sorry.
No. That was a very natural segue. put it between a piece of wax paper in the freezer in a little baggie.
Yeah, I've never done it wax paper, but I've just put it in a baggie in the freezer, and it will for a long time.
I haven't wanted it to get stuck to the baggie. You know, those little baggies that you have, like the head comes in with a nice figure?
Yeah, I save those. Every time I get in those baggies, I have a pile of them saved.
Yeah. If we ever go into the drug dealing business, we're set.
We're set with that. They might have some epoxy residue in there, but I'm sure that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on what you're putting in your body already. Yeah. You can put it in the freezer. And I gave you that tip as one of the only things I've ever taught Barry Bediger. You know, you put, if you've got hardened putty or it's not malleable the way you want it because there's some atmospheric conditions or it's getting old, you put the two pea-sized A and B on a paper plate or a plastic lid in the microwave 25 or 30 seconds, bingo, comes out good as new.
Yeah, I haven't tried that with the one component, but I know I've done that with the hardener part or whatever.
Put them both in at the same time.
Huh,
you know,
interesting.
Put an inch between them so they don't... I mean, it doesn't melt or anything. It just gets nice and soft so that it's easier to blend. Yeah. But the last putty on your list, I can't live without. I do the thing of mixing it with either the Aves or the Magisculpt, whatever's open.
Yep,
and that is... I'll give you a drum roll because this is one of the greatest things ever.
Duro or green stuff? Or is it Nitatite now? I can't remember what they call it.
No, it's Nitatite in the UK. It's Duro or green stuff in the US.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it comes in those big tubes, and I can't get through an entire set of it without it going leathery and difficult to mix. So.
Well, that responds good to the microwave trick, too.
Mm-hmm. I need to try that.
It really does. And I usually take the tube and chop it into three and put two of the green and the yellow in the freezer in the back so my wife doesn't stumble over them. And in a baggie, separate baggies, you can't, like those, the green and the blue can't even be in the same neighborhood.
Yeah, not in the same room either.
Yeah, no, they should be completely segregated. And I'm kidding, but you got to keep them apart. That's why I have one trashed X-Acto and one trashed XL, one with blue, one with green. Yeah. You know, yeah, I try to get into a smaller, tighter container to keep it fresher.
Yeah, I hate the ribbons. I really can't stand
those. Oh, those are useless.
Because that middle strip always becomes hard, and you have to cut it off the sides. So
And you wind up losing a big chunk of the ribbon. Yeah.
The tube, the sausages that comes in now are way better, even if you do keep them in the same thing. But if you keep them separate, they will last forever. It just becomes a little bit more difficult to mix. Right.
Yeah. But then you put it in the microwave for 25 seconds and it's good as new.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have to try that. What I love about it is it's so incredibly flexible.
Yeah.
You can actually roll it out and then cut it into strips and you have belting material or whatever. Bill Horan does that incredible detail work with Duro that I've never been able to do. I don't know how he does that.
I did a lot of Hussar braid for my Last Supper box with Duro that way.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best material to do braid with.
Yeah, it was great stuff, and I like the trick. You know, Bill Horan's popularized it, but he does not claim inventing it. I forget who he gives credit to of mixing. You know, various parts of the Duro green stuff and either Aves or Magic Sculpt or whatever your regular two-part epoxy putty is, Milliput, because you kind of get the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
The carvability of the regular two-part epoxy and a little of the flexibility and fineness of the Duro green stuff. So when I've taken a two-part epoxy putty and made fleshed out my wire mannequin to the right shape of a leg or an arm, and then I want to clothe it, I will mix Duro green stuff with Aves or Magisculpt and flatten it out and begin to sculpt the clothing.
It's the thing I like about it for sculpting clothing is it's got a little bit of stiffness to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't mash your sculpting tool into it and ruin a fold. It takes a little more pressure. It's a little more controllable. Yeah. But it adds a little bit of the flexibility, like you said. So if you do hair or something that comes out in a fine point, or if you have something hanging down in a small piece, you touch it, it's not going to break right off.
No, you can do mustaches or belting for the sword scabbard. But Duro on its own is difficult to smooth out with water. Whereas when you mix it with the Magisculpt or Aves, you have that still ability. I do a lot of sculpting with the brush. I'm forever smoothing. Mm-hmm. Here's something disgusting. But this is scientifically true.
Yeah.
Spit works better than water.
Yeah, and that's a Mike Blank tip.
Yeah, and he's absolutely right. Yeah. I've heard others say it too. There's something about the enzymes in your mouth, and we won't dig any deeper than that. But it works better than water. It's kind of...
Yeah, I hate to admit it, but there's nothing else that I've ever seen that works as well.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
All right, spit. Do you have more to say about putty?
No, I think I'll bet everybody already knows everything we've said about it.
But we're also talking to a lot of plastic modelers. We're going to mention one later who are beginning to do their first figures.
Yeah, that's true.
So they don't know that. And if anybody's bored, you got this for free. Fast forward or come back to the next episode. I'm going to do a twofer here.
Okay.
Flattening out, right? Okay, Jim, you just said you mix Duro and green stuff, Duro green stuff, and either Aves or Magisculpt. They both behave the same way. About 50-50 is the proportion, maybe 60 of the green stuff and 40 of the regular epoxy putty. You want to do a flag, you want to do a sleeve, you want to do something flat. I have this metal rod that came out of some damn IKEA piece of furniture that is long since gone. I have no idea what it was. I have no idea where it came from. It's like an iron rod, 9 inches long. It's heavier than the X-Acto handle. Mm-hmm. It's the perfect amount of heft and smoothness to flatten out the putty, which I put between, I cut off a chunk of wax paper.
Mm-hmm.
And now that alone is not enough. To put the putty between the folded over wax paper and use the rod to flatten it out because it will stick to the wax paper.
Mm-hmm.
There's a secret ingredient, and I don't think you know about this. I may turn you onto it. Liquid Vaseline.
Hmm. I've never heard of that until I just saw you write it down.
It's only made in the UK. PBO. PEBEO is the brand name. There was like one bottle of it 10 years ago at Blick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe one of the other art stores, the finer little art store. And I picked it up. It was like $15, right? Changed my life. Changed my life. You take one of those utility brushes, you know, the metal-handled cheap ones, and you just slop it on your wax paper, and then you take a tissue or another product I'll talk about later, a Kim wipe, and blot out the excess, put your putty down, fold it over the wax paper, and roll away and thin out to your heart's content.
Wow. I need to try that.
It's great.
Is it widely available now, though? Or
no, you got to go on Amazon And you may even have to order from a UK dealer, but it will ship over here.
Hmm.
Okay. Now, you know, that first bottle that I got 15 years ago was lasting forever. It had a stupid childproof cap on it,
mm-hmm.
which, like, was not working the way it should, as many of those don't. And one day I was trying to wrestle it off, fell over, spilled, finally bought a new bottle. And I didn't want to have that happen again, so I've just got a piece of aluminum foil over it now.
Mm.
But here's the other thing it's good for, that it's great for, all mm-hmm. right? You're going to drill with your Dremel
mm-hmm.
or your a pin vise drill, right?
Mm-hmm.
Into metal, into plastic, into anything. This is an old trick Mike Cobb taught me, the late, great Mike Cobb, mm-hmm. president for life of the MMSI mm-hmm. until we lost him. Mike would push his glasses up and pinch the bridge of his nose with that inevitable little bit of oil that we have there, and he would rub that on the drill bit.
That's almost worse than spitting on
the That is tools. Almost It's amazing the disgusting things we do for our hobby.
Yeah.
With your bottle of liquid Vaseline on your desktop, mm-hmm. You have that brush that you just keep dedicated for that, and you just run it over the bit.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, how many little pin vise drill bits have we broken in our lifetimes?
Yeah, well, it just reminds me of my machine shop teacher teaching us never to drill into metal without lubrication.
There you go. So you lubricate your drill bit, and works like a charm.
Yeah.
And it's nicer than wiping your greasy forehead or the bridge of your nose.
So would that work in place of spitting on your sculpting tools? Have you tried it for sculpting?
No. Only to the extent of rolling things out flat.
Mm, okay.
But no, because what I'm doing with spit or H2O is smoothing.
Smoothing, right. Yeah, but when you're sculpting, you know, sometimes the sculpting tool will get stuck a little bit, or you'll you know, kind of tear the... I don't know.
I haven't thought of that. I should try that.
I need to get some of this stuff, though. I'm going to order some today.
I knew I would get you excited about that, because that is just a miraculous bottle. It's perfectly clear. It looks like nothing.
Well, I know that people have will take some Vaseline, put it in alcohol, and it a little bit will dissolve into the alcohol. But I wonder what they're thinning it with. I wonder if it's just a different part of the refining process, the petroleum, and it just more liquid, or I mean, what does it smell like? Does it smell like anything? Or?
It doesn't have any smell. It doesn't have any color. It's perfectly clear. It's just a magical little bottle from heaven.
Huh. I bet some chemical, some knowledgeable chemistry people would be able to tell us exactly what it is, and they'd probably say, you dolts, why are you buying that stuff?
12 years of Catholic schooling cured me of any faith whatsoever. I look at the bottle of liquid Vaseline as a gift from the heavens. And I shall not question it. I'm just taking it on faith, my friend.
Well, I always want to dig in deeper, even though I don't know much about the stuff. But
you dig. You buy a bottle, and you play around, and you tell me how it worked.
Well, so you just reminded me of something, though. Flattening stuff out for flags or whatever, tarps. How do you get the thickness to be consistent of what you're rolling out?
Well, that is difficult. And I just saw a video that I was going to tell you about today.
Yeah, me too.
Some people, the one with the pasta machine?
Yeah, Scott Pasichnik from Small Soldier, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yep.
Good for Scott. I mean, I don't think I'd mess with that unless I was doing a tent or a large tarp. Or a flag, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, you know, my method, liquid Vaseline, wax paper, flatten out with my metal rod. I got to put a picture of this metal rod. I love it so much. You know, you let it harden. Mm-hmm. You go do something else or begin to harden. You go do something else for 45 minutes because when you're scraping it off the wax paper shortly after flattening it, it's too gummy still. Mm-hmm. You let it set up a little bit and then I can work with it. And I'm usually doing something. I'm only usually doing a sleeve at a time or a pant leg at a time. Mm-hmm. So I just try to cut with my X-Acto the rough size of that little. I mean, so we're talking about an inch and a half by a quarter inch, maybe.
I gotcha. You're just getting a piece out that you can lay on the figure to sculpt it, which is it really does help to get a consistent thickness of clothing. But if you are doing something that you need a consistent thickness, there is the pasta machine trick, which the first place I ever saw that used was with people who do Sculpey stuff. Dollhouse people, they use the pasta machine a lot. But what I was taught to do, and I can't remember where I learned this from, it might have been Mike Blank, to get two strips of styrene, the thickness you want your putty to be, and then ride the roller on top of those, and you've now got the piece to that thickness.
So that's a good idea. I mean, as long as you can get a piece that's fairly consistent, you're going to smooth it out on your figure in progress anyway. And, you know, you don't throw away the rest of the... You can ball it up again and roll it out again any number of times.
But if you do
eventually it sets. But
if you are doing something like a tarp or a flag, though, you do want that consistent thickness.
Consistency, yeah. I've never sculpted a flag. And I still use the ancient method of... lead foil for tarps and such. I know you don't like this stuff. I love it.
Well, it's just, I don't know if it's actual, you want to use the tin foil first, right? Not the lead.
I use the lead. It's more malleable,
but tin is pretty malleable, but it's are you sure it's lead? Because I mean, lead.
Yeah.
First off, lead. Shouldn't have it around a whole lot, but it's, you also need to,
I like to chew on it while I paint.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes people think that tin foil is lead foil, though. Just on wine bottles, I think a lot of times that's tin.
Yeah.
And that's
Squadron used to sell sheets of it. I don't know if they still do. Of the lead. It was lead foil. It said lead foil on.
Yeah, I remember.
And Verlinden made sheets of it.
Yeah.
And then I've got plenty of salvaged foil from wine bottles.
Yeah.
You know, my wife doesn't let me buy wine anymore because I buy it based on the quality of the foil I'm going to get.
Oh, I thought maybe you bought it in the box.
No, don't buy the box. I look at making sure it's not that plasticized, useless foil.
Yeah. Well, you can take, so usually that stuff is just plastic on the one side, and you can take that off with like lacquer thinner. But anyway, we're talking about foil. Sorry.
Yeah. All right. Do you have another?
I do. And this sounds so simple, and people are going to roll their eyes at this, but I make sure I have a huge stock of brass wire.
Yeah.
And you can buy that stuff in rolls, and that's useful for some things. Like you go to the craft store and there's a roll of brass wire, right? Different sizes.
For the beading people.
Yeah. And you can use that for certain things, but, for a lot of stuff, I like to buy the high quality KNS, brass wire. It's a different alloy. It's nice and hard and, and I get a couple different sizes. I always have at least two sizes, one which is what something like I think it's 32 thousandths or something to pin figures to bases through the leg, and then it's nice to have a smaller one, maybe half that size. I don't know what would that be, like a 64th of an inch or something diameter, to pin arms on, equipment on, because I pin everything. If something can be pinned, I will pin it.
Yeah, Joe Burton makes fun of me. There's nothing that I don't pin. The canteen, the sword, the cartridge box, you name it. And he's always laughing at me. And then he had that beautiful Van Gogh box and everything kept falling out of it. I said, see, imagine taking that to Europe. You know,
yeah, if there's exactly.
And sometimes it's frustrating. You've got a 1/32 54 millimeter chair leg that you mm-hmm. want to pin. You know, it's like yeah. you better. Yeah, you're gonna have to really put on the Optivisor and very carefully pin vise drill
yeah.
with yeah. But then it's never coming out.
Nope, it's not going to come off. And people, like I told you once, I had that TSA agent knock a plume off because his hand just brushed by it. I pinned that on, and I've actually bumped it a couple times. It has not moved.
Pin your plume. I know, that's a very good example.
So Joe Burton does not pin things.
No.
I'm just going to make a note of that right here.
Yeah, no, he makes fun of me. You know, I've literally held the inner scene of a box that I built upside down to show him, you know, and he just uses white glue.
I test mine by dropping them from standing height when I finish a project.
I throw it out the window.
Yeah.
But I'm on the first floor, so.
Yeah, that's fine.
I don't, you know, no matter, I love K&S, and they're a Chicago company, I believe.
They are.
I love their tubes, which I use for spotlights. In the boxes. I love their, do you know they have aluminum rods as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And copper. Brass.
Now, those, the copper and the aluminum both have different bending capabilities. They're wonderful. I've got every size they make, 10 of each, and I can never find the right one when I'm doing an arm or a leg.
I mostly just need to organize my stuff better because I've got all of that too.
I've got them fairly well organized in a mug. It really helps if you don't take them out of the container or the plastic. But that plastic, it's bad. You cut off the top and you can't get the rod out.
Yeah.
It's a frustrating packaging. I don't know what would be better, but it's...
Well, I like to keep the packaging just so that I, because I want to know what size it is when I go to buy it again.
Yeah, well, we sound like complete idiots here. We're talking about, you know, which size is it, and we have no idea.
Right. And I think it's, I was just looking, and I think the one I use to pin figures is 32 thousandths, which I get irritated with the Imperial system with thousandths. I don't know why we couldn't switch to metric, but anyway.
It was a communist plot.
That's what they said.
Yeah,
you do remember when we were all being taught to switch to metric, right?
It was the same time they were trying to do brain control with fluoride in the water.
That's right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Nixon put a stop to all of that.
Yeah, and that's probably, and then punk rock ruined America.
Yeah, there you go. All right, if you're going to be talking wire and brass rod, you absolutely need a... Barry Biediger, right here on his list, a good pin vise and drills.
Mm-hmm. And again, that sounds so obvious, but the reason I was going to mention this is get the best one you can buy, pin vise.
Absolutely.
And I remember when I was just about ready to enter college, and I'm one of those, as I've mentioned, I was one of those geeks who never stopped modeling. And I went to a hobby shop after moving to Salt Lake. And I said, I need a pin vise and some drills. Mm-hmm. And the guy reached on the back wall right behind him, and he said, well, you're going to want the best one then. And it's by Mascot. I don't know if they still make these, but it's got this.
That.
It's got
wood
the wooden
handle.
Wooden handle that you hold in your hand, and then you can spin the...
Oh, right? Wow. I've never seen one of those.
It was something like $10, and I was too... shy to say no, I don't want something that expensive, so I pretty much blew my entire hobby budget for that month.
No kit that day.
But that it was worth getting. Get the best you can, the most comfortable one you can, and buy a bunch of drills.
Oh my God, you can never have enough drill bits.
Yep,
and because they break, and you know I have six different pin vices. Because I'm lazy. I don't want to have to trade out the bit every time with six different bits. And I don't love any of them. the way mm-hmm. you seem to love your fancy one there.
Mm-hmm.
They all work. I'll tell you what doesn't work, the ones that you push on the spring and
no,
it's supposed to
that
be.
Never,
no, those don't work.
No, they don't.
No.
The bigger ones will. The big, like the, what would you call it? It's the big sturdy ones that you can push drill will work. But those, when you get them too small, I've never got them to work. But maybe if you put that PBO liquid Vaseline on it, maybe it would work.
I've done that. Doesn't work. Still doesn't work. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I just use them as regular and, you know, pin vices. And I tell you, related, I've tried many different electric tools to drill. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've got two X-Actos, you know, I've got two Dremels, you know, the one handheld regular, the one with the long gooseneck mm-hmm. extension, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the one I'm always reaching for is the Dremel Stylus. Mm. Lithium battery powered, sits in a little charger. It's frustrating in that it doesn't have the universal chuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to have one of those. Yeah.
Oh my God, I can't be bothered looking for the right chuck and then looking for the right bit. But I have it on my ideal width of, I have a bit in there for the ideal width of arms, legs, or pin for the legs. I mean, it's wonderful. As long as I put a little liquid Vaseline on there, metal, plastic. You know what's good about it? The regular old high-powered Dremel
mm-hmm.
Will melt plastic, and depending on the metal, will even be difficult.
If you have dull bits, it will. Yeah.
Yeah, but even with a new bit and Vaseline or lubricant, the speed doesn't get low enough for the speeds we want to use, whereas the Dremel Stylus does. And I say that having found on eBay the old variable speed control.
Yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's like 30, 40 years old. I got it on eBay. I still can't get it necessarily slow enough to put a wire in a Hysterex piece.
To me, it's not so much the worry about melting plastic. It's the lack of control. Because when you have something spinning 6,000 RPM, it's just harder to control. This might be something that maybe you'll like this or maybe you won't. I don't know. But this is what I switched to. I got rid of my Dremel and I got...
You don't have a Dremel?
I got rid of it because I got this Proxon.
Hmm.
And it slows down to where you can barely see it turning. And it still has the torque to do, you know, to drill and stuff.
Huh.
So, you want to... demonstration of it?
Yeah. I've never seen one of those. Where'd you get it?
You can get them off Amazon or Proxons are pretty common.
I'm adding it to the list right now. Just you haven't shown it to me on the Zoom screen.
You do have to get a dedicated power supply.
Mm.
The foot switch is handy.
All right. You got one of those classic Dremel round carvers.
Yeah, I don't know if you can see how that's spinning, but it's like
barely
turning around.
That's barely discernible motion. Universal chuck?
Universal chuck. It's a pretty sturdy piece of machinery.
It's nice, and yet it's thin. It's not much thicker than like a small flashlight in your hand.
Yeah, yeah, it's very, very, very much easier to handle than a Dremel.
The Dremel Stylus is shaped like a gun, so that's pretty easy.
Yeah,
like a water pistol.
I still feel like this is easier to handle though, because it's just so thin and easy to fit in the hand.
All right, I'm loving it. Sculpting tools. We promised we'd go back to them. What do you like?
I probably my favorite ones are ones that I made myself.
Mm. Like toothpicks?
They're like brass toothpicks, which I don't know if you remember this one. Was it MIG or was it AK came out with brass toothpicks?
Oh.
Have you seen
that? I don't remember
that. You know, like for $10 or whatever, you can buy brass toothpicks.
Or you could chop up some K&S rod. Well, and make
right,
your own.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everybody's laughing at them, and they were a little bit expensive for what they were, but they could be handy. Because that's basically what I've made. Is
oh, look
I've
at that.
Carved down some brass and put them in wood handles.
Wasn't it Calvin Tan was showing us his...
It was Taesung again.
Taesung Horns.
He'd done something very similar. I've
with
got
plastic.
Actually a
yeah.
Yeah, and I've got actually a like a heavy duty sewing needle in one.
Oh, yeah.
Like an upholstery needle.
Huh.
And I just to me having something like that that's a little more substantial that I'm not going to lose or break is just it just feels better to me than a toothpick.
All right. All right. It's all about how it works in your hand.
Yeah, and I do have some dental tools, a couple in particular that are very handy. And there's one, what is it called? Is it called a shovel or something? That a dentist friend of mine actually said is fairly rare. I think it might be this one.
Oh, look at that. It's like a flat spatula, but a little thicker.
Yeah, and I use that a lot for sculpting. A lot of the dental tools aren't extremely handy, but yeah.
No,
that's...
and I stab myself with them.
Yeah, that's one of the problems. But the other thing, and I was going to mention this when you were talking about starting holes for drilling. When I was in college in the biology section of the bookstore.
Yeah.
They sell these little dissection probes.
Oh.
And it's like a really sharp needle on the end of a plastic handle. I don't know if you've seen these before.
No.
This is one of the most used tools I have on my bench. Because I'm always scraping, like scratching, clearing out panel lines on airplanes or starting holes for drilling.
Yeah.
I probably make more use of this tool than almost anything else.
So you'll use that instead of the tip of the X-Acto to start a hole.
Because the tip of the X-Acto, it's more difficult to get the actual center, it'll wander.
It really is. It wanders,
And it will, as you mentioned, will just chip immediately.
Yeah. So you waste a blade and you're not in the center.
Yeah.
And if it's a really fine piece that you're trying to drill,
yep.
You're screwed. You're just
and
screwed.
It's really easy to split something like a gun barrel when you're drilling it too.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
I like to just jab that in there as a starter hole and. Yep.
Well, I'm going to inject another sculpting tool that you turned me onto, and I'm shocked I am that it is not on your list. This was also a Rio Rondo product, or they had it available. The Color Shaper.
Yeah. Yeah,
They're brushes, except there's no brush. There's a little rubbery, mysterious origins tip in different sizes. Yeah, that you're holding it up there. We'll put some pictures made by a Royal Sovereign Limited. Mm-hmm. You get a set of them. And, boy, those are perfect for putting in folds.
Yeah, I actually don't use them as much as I used to. They
you
are
used
nice.
To use them.
I did, and they... One thing that's a little irritating to me about them is it's hard to get the putty not to stick to the rubber tip.
You got to spit on it.
I know, and I just don't want to do that. Or rub it on my nose or what?
No, you put it in your mouth.
I know.
Like a lollipop.
I just don't want to do that, but...
I'm trying to collect the poisons, man. I know. My autopsy, what they're going to find. About, a pound and a half of Aves. 6 ounces of super glue.
Great.
But I like those, and we'll put a link on there. What else you got? Or is it my turn? I'm looking
at your
list, and I'm like, I got many more things on my list than you have left. Kim wipes, you turned me onto, right? When you want to sop something up, when you want to clean something and you don't want, similarly, even the nice Kleenex, because you got to watch out with Kleenex, right? If you make the mistake and buy the box, that's got the ultra soft, you know, for when you got to blow your nose and it's getting raw and red, you know, ugh, that's horrible. It leaves a smear on your glasses if you use it to clean your glasses.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It leaves a smear on everything. So you told me about Kim wipes, and then we went to IPMS. There was a guy with a table just selling Kim wipes.
Yeah. Yeah, you thought I was making it up, huh?
No. As soon as you said Kim wipes will change your life, I ordered some off Amazon, and they did, and then I bought six boxes.
Yeah, they're worth having around. I like them to, as my cloth to wick off some of the paint as I'm painting. Instead of, I used to use like a cloth diaper.
Wow.
Because it's
I won't ask where you got that.
No, it was new. Brand new.
But I have no child.
No, I don't. But the Kim wipes are fantastic.
Enough said. My chopper. Mm. I love my chopper. The little razor cutter with the handle to do bits of balsa or basswood, you know, doing dioramas. I'm always, and I don't care, you know, measure three times, cut once, right? You're looking for a 2.5-inch length of balsa. You need a whole bunch of it the same to do, I don't know, shingles or beams or, you know, no matter how careful you are, they're never the same length.
Yeah. No, it's
great. With the chopper, boom, 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 you get the same length. It's just a wonderful thing.
Do you have the one that has the bases like a cutting mat that you can replace? Or do you have the wood one?
Yes.
Okay.
No, I have the base as a cutting mat. I've worn through one or two of them already.
Okay.
But you can also turn them upside down or turn them around and get two uses out of them before you got to replace them.
Can you cut up an old cutting mat and put it in there, I wonder?
I think they're thinner. They're thinner than
are
the...
They?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. That's a good experiment.
I have the wood, the original version. I think what you have is like called the Chopper 2 or something.
Yeah, probably.
And the one I have is the original one that is on like the that wooden, not the wood, but the, what's that called? that material like paint palettes are made out of.
Oh.
And the blade digs in and it wears a groove in.
Then it ruins it, yeah.
And you can't do anything with it after that.
Right, right. No, well, it does eventually into the self-healing mat wear a groove, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you just got to replace it. But, you know, buy a bunch of extra blades, buy a bunch of extra mats, and anything that you're doing, styrene, basswood, that you need consistency, it's got to stop on either end, and you can get nice, consistent lengths or widths.
Yeah, very handy. Yeah.
I love that thing. I'm catching up to you. I got another one. The razor knife, right? This is different. There's a guy who comes to the MMSI show. He was out there at the IPMS Nats. He runs Unique Master Models. We all call him in Chicago Johnny Czech.
Yep.
Czechoslovakian fellow. Mm-hmm. He makes some of his own tools. I'm going to give you a twofer here. The two coolest tools I ever got from Johnny Czech are this razor knife. It's a wood handle with a razor blade that goes in the middle. It's really great for the super fine cuts. You'll want to cut off a hand on a resin figure in 32nd or even 48th scale.
Yep.
That's the tool for your job.
No, they're fantastic.
They're fantastic. And the other thing I got from Johnny Czech, and this I think he made himself, I think the razor knife is just a product he distributes. He had like a little awl handle, right? Mm-hmm. And different metal lengths that fit into it. It comes with like two dozen for buttons.
Mm.
Pressing buttons into putty. You roll out your putty in the aforementioned way, and you want to make a bunch of buttons of the same size. You got to spit or wet on the tip, and it's concave, and you just do a whole row of them. You let your putty harden up, and then you take the blunter. It sort of has to be a sort of blunt toothpick edge, and you pop out all these little buttons.
Mm-hmm.
And 30% of them wind up lost forever. They shoot off.
Yep.
But, you know, you it's pretty easy to get 50 buttons, and it'll be a long time before you use all those.
He didn't invent that. That's actually a jeweler's beading tool, I'm pretty sure is what that is you're talking about.
I think he finds useful stuff and he repurposes it for the hobby.
Yeah, definitely. And that was actually, I remember the first I saw that used, I can't remember who was doing it, but it was about 20 to 30 years ago. Somebody was using that to actually make rivets on armor.
Yeah.
Jamming into the plastic. But you can shop around and you can get those for really cheap. They're not expensive tools, but they're
I don't think I paid more than $20.
Yeah, I'm talking about way less than that. But
really?
Yeah. Now that you mentioned buttons, though, something I forgot to add to my list is you should always have
buttons or rivets.
Or a block of hard rubber. What I used to use is a hockey puck.
Really?
Why? And huh?
Why do we need hard rubber? Why?
Because there another way of making rivets is to just take the end of a drill bit.
Mm-hmm.
And punch it into copper or aluminum sheet on a piece of hard rubber like this. Mm. And as you press down, it will pop a perfect circle out of the sheet metal. And it will be slightly domed even.
But,
yeah, just another method.
Show me that piece of hard rubber again.
This is something I got when Squadron was going out of business. They actually sold this as, you know, a block of hard rubber, and it was...
Wow.
It used to be way overpriced, but I think I got it for like $2. And I had lost my hockey puck, and I don't want to go to some...
How do you lose a hockey puck?
I don't know. I really don't know. Wow. The only one I have is a commemorative one from when I was a kid, and I used to go to Golden Eagles hockey games with my family. And so I didn't want to use that one. Yeah. The one I used for years, for decades, was one that I came within inches of being hit with at a college hockey game. And I was actually up on the big screen.
Wow. I'm speechless.
As
long as I've known you, you've had even less interest in sports than I have, which is zero.
I'm not a big sports person, but hockey games used to be kind of a family thing for us to go to the minor league hockey game. And before one of these, the University of Utah was playing a game. Yeah. And a game? Is it a hockey game?
I have no idea.
I don't know. We'll have to ask a Canadian.
I'll ask Carmel. She liked hockey. She used to like to go and watch the fights.
Well, I was actually looking off to the side, and I heard an explosion, and it rocked me, and I turned around, and everybody was looking at me with this shocked look.
Which you hate.
And my brother-in-law points down, you know, at my feet, and there was a hockey puck laying there. It had been smacked, you know... however fast it was going, hundreds of miles an hour, and hit right beneath my bleacher seat.
Wow.
Right between my legs.
Wow.
And I picked it up, and that's what I used for years for modeling. But yeah.
And then you lost it.
I lost it. I think it was when I moved. I think it was when we moved into this house. But
it's probably in the bottom of a box where it makes no sense being that you haven't needed to open.
Maybe. I don't know. But
you know. Yeah. Wow. Well, all right. I have nothing to say to that. I'm going to move on to my other favorite. I'm just surprised.
I'll cut that.
Barry Bediger. No. And hockey and rubber. And that little square block there looks like, I don't know, it's making me think of like the packaging on a high-end sex toy or something.
Really? A black square of rubber?
Yeah, I don't know why. It's got an almost Kubrick 2001 opening with the gorillas kind of thing happening there.
Square block of rubber? I'm just
thinking of a rubbery texture, I guess. I don't know. It's freaking me out. I don't know. I'm sticking with my Johnny Check tool. All right. Last thing on my list. I finally caught up. Micro brush applicators. You know, they got the red, the green, the yellow, and then there's the blue brushes. For putting on glue, for getting in tight spaces, you know, super glue hardens them. You can only use it for like one setting, sitting where you've got a couple of things to glue. But white glue, you just clean it off in some water, and you're fine. I just love those. You know, even more than toothpicks. Sometimes the toothpick is just easiest. And I don't know, even if I have 500 on hand, I'm reluctant to kill one with a super glue application.
Yeah.
Unless it's really something I got to get into. But, you know, they even have the ridged, scored, tapered neck so you can bend them to like 90 degrees to get into a difficult place. When I was building that Lancaster or any plastic kit, I mean, indispensable. Really gets into places you can't get easily.
No, they're great.
Elsewhere.
And if you're going to put together a repair kit going to a show,
yeah,
always throw in some of those. Yeah.
Throw in some of those. Throw in an unopened super glue, because if it's opened, it will leak.
Yeah.
No matter what, they leak.
Even if it doesn't leak, it'll go get up into the cap and get all... So, yeah, you want a new one. Along the lines of micro brushes, I don't know if you've seen these little makeup brushes.
No, I don't usually wear makeup.
Right, but, you know, this from, like, your glam band days.
No.
So, I forgot what I was going to say. You
makeup brushes.
Yeah. Okay, so I just saw Joan using these for some makeup she was putting on her eyelashes or something once. And then there's these ones that are used for, like, I think they're used for lipstick a lot. Mm. But there's, like, the white stiffer bristle one, and then one that's kind of like a one-aught or a one-sable brush kind of shape. But you can buy them in packs of hundreds for really cheap. And they're semi-disposable, probably not the most, you know,
environmentally friendly.
Yeah. But I clean them out and reuse them a lot.
And I inherit a lot of the bigger, like, powdery type brushes for applying powder from Carmel, and clean them out. And they're good for, you know, wiping away sawdust or...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's good to have some some little brushes just handy. Yeah.
Well, anything free is good, too.
Right. Yep.
We're recycling. So even if it's not environmentally friendly, we're at least saving it from going
to garbage. And I kind of have a hard time thinking that mini brushes are the thing that's bringing the world down, but I...
Yeah, I'm going to blame all those billionaire jerks who, like, want to take rocket tourism.
Yeah, well, I think we do a lot of things that are... I think there's way bigger things than some of the stuff we worry about that are a problem. But, you know, what do I know?
Yeah, well, that's us. We're being selfish. All right, so you got two left.
All right. One thing that... this is something that I think gets a bad rap. And it gets a bad rap probably for good reason, but parafilm.
It gets a bad rap from me. You gave me a bunch of it to try to experiment with, and I can't get it to work and do a damn thing.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
So to me, the problem, the biggest problem with it is it was marketed incorrectly, and it still is. If you look at the Micromark site, they show people masking complex, you know, camouflage airplane masks with it. It doesn't work for that. It's completely useless for that, in my opinion. But it's a film that's made. It's a wax based product, and I think it's used in laboratories to seal like bottles and stuff, like a beaker or something. And when you stretch it out, it becomes sticky. So what I will use it for is if I am doing anything where I need to mask an area off, like if I'm going to airbrush a little section or sometimes I'll airbrush part of my figure with a varnish or whatever. It's just so easy to take a bit of that and mask the rest of the figure. So you just stretch it out and it becomes sticky and you press it on. And that doesn't
work
for you?
Maybe I didn't realize you got to stretch it.
Oh, yeah. You need to pull it. You need to stretch it out. Yep.
Well, I have a little piece that you gave me, and now I can try it for that.
Yeah.
And all of this was building for you for the most expensive new toy. I think you even have two of them, don't you?
I ended up getting rid of one. But I just got a new one. And I know it's controversial, and people hate me for it, including you.
But no, I don't hate you. I'm going to need you to do something for me eventually.
Good, yeah. It's just, we can't escape the fact that 3D printers are a very useful tool nowadays. They're a critical tool in the hobby, and they're going to become more so.
Well, you got X number of particularly weird shaped, you know, roller wheels for an armored vehicle or whatever. You know, I mean, you drive yourself crazy scratching 12 of them. Instead, you can print it out. Boom.
Yeah, and not only that, but something that's extremely complex, the shape, it can be printed out as one piece. I mean, with tank modeling, there are already all kinds of models out there that you can buy to print tracks, individual track links. I mean, you can buy some pre-printed, but you can also just grab a file, print it on your own printer, and you have it that day.
I think it's a great tool. I don't think it's going to replace sculpted and cast in resin, in metal, in styrene figures. But, you know, I don't know. The pilots in my Lancaster were 3D printed, and they were beautiful.
I don't think it'll completely replace, especially plastic models, anytime soon.
No.
There's no way. Because it's
but
just
I've
not
seen
the same
beautiful
thing.
Work. You know, we saw at IPMS Nats that guy who had the weird... the really unique World War One vehicles.
Yep.
Beautiful 3D printed, amazing kits.
Luis Vargas, I believe, is his name. I bought one of those. They're really cool.
I know
cool.
you did. Yeah.
But figures, though, more and more, I wouldn't be surprised if commercial figures within 10 years are nothing but 3D printed or 90% 3D printed. Or files that you can download and print yourself. Because already there's a high percentage of like fantasy figures that are made that way. 90 might be a little bit high, but it's already to where there's a significant number.
I have tried 3 or 4 different manufacturers, different printed out 3D figures, right?
Mm-hmm.
The goat in my witch's box, the skeleton came from a different manufacturer, that Lancaster crew. I don't like the material. I think it's beautiful, fidelity to detail, wonderful undercuts, fine. I've got no problem with the detail. It doesn't carve well. It can be hard to clean up seam lines, it can be impossible to drill without breaking, it can be way too brittle or way too soft. I've had both extremes.
I
don't know, when it's as good as Calvin Tan's resin, let me know.
Well, I think it's getting close because the materials improve all the time. This one I just printed out last week, this bust, which is incredible.
Is that a naked woman bust?
Well, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But it's not like one of those. It's not like one of those.
No, it's a
weird,
realistically proportioned.
It's an actual. She looks like an actual person.
Yeah. Except the resin, she's blue.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But the resin is very carvable. It's way better than the stuff that I had printed with on my first resin printer years ago, which was brittle. It was hard to make it anything but brittle, like glass.
Yeah, yeah.
And there, you know, it does change over time, too. It becomes more and more brittle. But I just think, I mean, you're already seeing people use it a lot. It's not, I think there will be improvements over time to where, like I said, within a decade, you're going to see this as a huge part of the figure hobby.
Well, you know, as long as the quality can match the production in metal or in styrene or in resin, I'm all for it. You, despite being a better artist than me, a graphic artist, and B, a way more knowledgeable computer guy, you are not going to sit down and design a new figure to print out.
See, that's where I don't think
you told
that,
me that.
Yeah, I don't think I want to get into digital sculpting. Right. But I don't know. Maybe I will. But the thing that I don't think it'll completely replace manual sculpting or whatever you want to call it. But I think, as far as commercial figures, though, I think that's where you're going to see, you know, people use it a lot. And also, something that was a problem, we talked about it with Michael Contreras when we had him on. It's been a problem in the past that the sculpts do not look right, the digital sculpts, or they didn't.
But yeah.
They're constantly improving. And yeah. Real sculptors, I think what's happening is real sculptors more and more are doing it, and they're bringing their expertise in sculpting into it more, yeah. rather than yeah. doing these weird, odd looking, faces that are perfectly symmetrical and whatnot. It's improving all the time.
Well, look, you know, if Kubrick were still alive, I believe he could shoot a movie as brilliant as any of those he made in his lifetime on an iPhone.
Yeah, sure.
All right. So, you know, you put any of the great sculptors we have, if they desire to work in that medium as opposed to putty, I believe great results would happen. I just want to make sure I can clean it up flawlessly, drill it, sand it, prime it. I want it to behave the same way as the best properties we have now, whether it's something you've sculpted yourself out of epoxy putty or resin or metal or plastic.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think it is getting better and better all the time.
Yeah. How much did you have to shell out for your printer?
So the total cost, these things were selling a month ago or so for like $800.
Mm.
And it popped up for $500 and I jumped on it.
Wow.
So
wow. And what about all the ancillary, I mean, they sell you the printer, the color printer for $150, but then you got to spend, ridiculous amount of money for the ink.
For the resin is not, it's not ultra cheap, but it's like $30 to $40 for a kilogram, which will print you a lot of figures.
Have they got clear resin yet?
Yeah, they do. And I don't know if it's improved now. It may have, but when I've seen it in the past, it's a little bit too yellowy. Mm-hmm. But if it's better, if the clarity's better now, I think that could be a really useful thing for...
My God, I am so frustrated by the scarcity of 32nd, 35th bottles out there.
Mm-hmm.
Clear bottles,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Or the ability to print... I mean, this would be really easy, but the ability to print... because no matter how carefully you try to cut clear... plastic mm-hmm. for window panes, let's say. It's difficult.
Yeah.
I had 10 windows to make with 4 panes each, it would be nice to have a couple of sheets with 40.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's all kinds of things.
All right. See, now we are at the 1 hour and 38 minute mark.
Uh-oh.
On an idea that you thought nobody, that you'd have nothing to say and nobody would be interested. Now, we may well have lost 2/3 of our audience.
Probably so, yeah.
Or put them to sleep and it's only running on. But I think we could easily do another 3 episodes on this topic because I'm nowhere out of tools.
No, it is a better topic than I thought it would be.
Well, I always learn. I mean, I got to go out and get a Proxon, the two-part... fast-setting putty and the ceramic scraper right there. Mm-hmm. I've convinced you to buy yourself some liquid Vaseline.
Yeah.
It turned out to be more fun. You were skeptical at first.
Yeah, I hopefully it's useful to people.
Well, I think so. I can talk about toothpicks all day.
Yeah.
I guess my life is diminishing. We had a bunch of submissions and feedback and comments from listeners, and you're going to steer us through those.
Yeah, first off, Robbie Knopfs, who's been very supportive of our podcast, sent us in some photos of a 48 scale figure he's done for an aircraft model, an airplane model.
I loved it.
It's really nice. And it's a really good example of what we were talking about on our episode where we talked about why modelers are afraid to paint figures. And he seemed to take a lot of our advice and did a really good job. And I think that's the kind of figure that really does enhance an airplane model.
Oh, you are absolutely correct. And I hope Robbie is going to continue to have fun doing more figures in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Good job, Robbie. And then also, we got an email a few weeks ago from Warren Kahn about the Plastic Crack podcast, and they were having mm-hmm. a painting challenge for August that was going to be a box diorama. And I believe he said he was inspired by our podcast, right? Or they were.
Yeah, no, that's what they said. Decided to give it a shot. They did it as a Facebook group challenge. And wow, yeah. I wish my first boxes were as good as theirs.
I was impressed. They were really very cool, really cool boxes. We'll show pictures of them on our blog, right?
Yeah, Warren said they're mainly, you know, the group members are mainly war gamers, I believe.
Yeah.
And so they're working with minis, but they did some great things with paint and composition, and the boxes look nice, and the lighting looks great.
Yeah. In fact, the one, and I think it was one of Warren's, hopefully I'm not incorrect about that. I don't know if you noticed this, but the box was 3D printed.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was really cool.
That would sure save me a lot of sawdust.
I've thought of doing that. That's the first time I've seen that happen. I really have thought of doing that because I hate sawing wood and making the boxes. It was really,
I know you do.
Really cool outer box, though.
Would you do it as different sides of the box, 3D printed? And then assemble, or what?
I think that would... Generally, that would be the easiest, but I think you could print most of it in one go with an FDM printer, which is what he did.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, people haven't been making enough use of our nifty Telby widget. We put the address on the blog. We put it in all of your... You're the king of social media to let people know when we drop a new... episode. You know, we've gotten some great emails. I keep writing folks back and saying, hey, you know, click this link and tell us so we can include your voice on the pod, which is just a complete treat.
Well, I understand why not everybody's comfortable doing that, but it is a pretty cool thing to actually hear people's voices. So,
ladies and gentlemen, I will tell you, I would have never in a million years thought that Mr. Biediger would call me one day in the middle of the end of the world, COVID lockdown, and say, hey, we should do a podcast.
Yeah.
Because you're the shy retiring type normally.
Yeah, I was surprised myself. So.
Yeah. So, hey, folks, lend us your voice. Yeah. It's great to have it on the show.
Yeah.
But this one, you're going to play and we can answer.
Yep. Let's listen.
G'day, gentlemen, Jim and Barry. Jamie from South Australia, wishing you all well, and hopefully you're enjoying your summertime, or we're sweltering through winter here at a mere 20 degrees Celsius. Wonderful work on doing the history of figures, getting people in, sterling work. My question would be, most busts are character studies, but how could you transform a bust from a character study into... I don't know, how would you say it, as a telling a story when you've got little more than shoulders, chest, and head? OSL, some kind of dynamic phrase? That would be the question to you. Okay, thanks, gentlemen. We'll look forward to the next podcast.
I love that accent.
Yeah. Yep.
G'day.
Yeah.
G'day, my friend.
Yeah.
Or do we say mate? G'day, mate.
Yeah, that's more like it. But that was a really good question, though, about busts and telling a story with busts. I don't know. It's tough because you are dealing with a lot less material, but I think there are things you can do. One thing I've thought about is just the setting you put it on, the base. You can actually add elements to give it a setting and tell a story. But I don't know. What else?
Oh, I had a couple of ideas. You know, the base idea is an interesting one because most people just stick a brass rod and, you know, one ends in the bust and one ends in the base. Mm-hmm. But I think we've seen fantasy modelers in particular and some historical modelers do some great things with the lighting.
Yeah. Yeah, like object source lighting or just reflected light from the side, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you can see moonlight, a figure's lit by moonlight on one side, but then the other side you can see the reflection of a fire or something. So
yeah, I think that's great, you know, and it adds a new dimension. I did that with a little Edgar Allan Poe bust, I think I've shown folks. You know, that's, you know, for a, he didn't say whether he was talking about sculpting or stock. Now, obviously, if you're sculpting, this is a little easier, but if it's a stock figure, a little bit of minor conversion work. I've seen some busts I'm thinking of one in particular. I'm going to have to really search for it, of a Brit soldier in the Peninsular War. And, you know, a hellish campaign in the heat and just brutal fighting. And, you know, he shows the scars and the scratches, the haunted, sunken eyes, you know, the thousand-yard stare, they would call it in World War II. And just all the ravages of the Spanish battlefields are on the soldier's face. And I think even if you have a stock clean bust, that's not a lot of work with paint or a little bit of minimal sculpting. You know, on the other hand, a figure that's on the parade ground or, you know, in the king's throne room, if you're doing fantasy, would be, you know, cleaner and on their best appearance. And I think, you know, thinking before you tackle the painting of a bust about the story and the setting and the lighting really can do a lot.
Yeah. And another thing I thought about, speaking of fantasy painters and the way they've done a lot of natural or non-metallic metal painting, and I've seen a lot of people do reflections in armor of like trees, for example. I suppose you could add elements that are being reflected from, you know, shiny metal. Maybe that would help tell the story.
That'd be fantastic. Yeah. Wow. If somebody could pull that up. So like you have a cuirassier and in his cuirass, in his armor or in the knight's armor, you have something being reflected.
Yeah. In fact, there's that Campaigns magazine cover, I don't know if you remember it, of a cuirassier, and he's holding a child, and he and the baby's looking at the reflection in his cuirass. I think that that could be cool.
Yeah. Andrea had a neat little vignette of a cuirassier shaving with his reflection in his armor.
It'd take a lot of skill, but you know, you can't say that there are no more challenges out there. So,
well, you know, I not that I pulled it off super skillfully, but I pulled it off passingly, so that people were asking me how I did it when I did my Apollo moon landing box. The astronaut taking Armstrong's, I forget his name now, taking Armstrong's photo, you could see Armstrong posing in his visor.
Yeah.
You know how I did that?
You told me, but I can't remember now.
I told you. I took an iPhone photo of the figure. I shrunk it down to the right size. I tweaked it a bit in Photoshop. I printed it out as a decal, put it on the visor, and then painted to blend it in.
That's cool.
And it worked.
Yeah. No, it looks great.
Yeah, that one worked. It was all downhill for me after that. Well, it was great to hear from the Box folks and their podcast. And there are so many podcasts out there. We like to remind people, so many good ones.
Yeah.
In the hobby world, we like to remind people you can find the up-to-date list of all of them at modelpodcasts.com.
Yep. Yeah, there's even a new one from Sweden, I just noticed. I was looking at the page today, and
wow.
I don't know.
Is it in Swedish?
I don't know. It kind of the name of it is in Swedish, so it makes me wonder if it is in Swedish. I'll have to give it a try. But
I'm having bad flashbacks to the Muppet Show's Swedish Chef.
Oh, God. No.
I'm just displaying my ugly Americanness, I suppose.
We'll have to have Mike Blank talk to you about that.
All right. He can set me straight. Yeah. So, as always, just reminding people to go to leave us a voicemail message. It's a treat having your voices on the podcast. And we're always open to suggestions about where to go next, other tools, other tips, other techniques. I got to go buy all this stuff, Barry. And tell me again, what's the one that's the hole starter? Because I just ruined something the other day trying to start a hole with my X-Acto again.
It's the one I have is a it's a dissection probe. So it's when for biology students when they I never did this in high school, but you know when you dissect a frog and poke around on the inside. Yeah. I guess that's what it's
we
for.
Did that. We did a pig and a shark.
Wow. Yeah, I never.
It was brutal.
I never did that in biology in high school, but yeah.
The smell of that formaldehyde still haunts
me. I remember the smell of the biology room, and I wasn't a big fan of that, so yeah.
Not good. Where the hell did you find a biology dissection program?
I was just hanging out at the bookstore at the university back, I've had this a long time, I guess. And I used to just go in there and look at things like art supplies, and I was just in the science section, and they just had a bucket of these, and I thought, oh, that looks kind of handy, and it's been very handy. It's very sharp. That's the thing I like about it. It's really pointed and sharp. It's not like just your everyday pen, and it's sturdy.
See, we could talk about tools forever. I'm at a loss here. American Science and Surplus, on some of your visits to Chicago, I took you. It was up by Shep's old place, and one of the places the MMSI Breakfast Club gathers.
Yeah.
And they lost their lease or decided they could get cheaper space. And now they're out in Park Ridge, where my bandmates live.
I just noticed that. I was just looking them up yesterday, believe it or not. And I was...
Because they would have that.
I wouldn't be surprised, but
they have beakers and test tubes and...
I love going in there. They have all kinds of cool stuff.
Well, I say they would have it, but the thing is, you go in there looking for X, and then you find 73 Ys that you didn't know you needed, but they didn't have X on that trip.
The most bizarre thing we ever found in there, I don't know if you remember this, but Joan had found this toy that she loved when she was a kid. And it was a little horse racing toy that where the horses, you know, you want battery operated and the horses race along this track. And I tried to fix it for her, but it was just too damaged. And within a couple months of that, me trying to do that, you took us there and they had an entire aisle just filled with these things. A toy from the 60s. Yeah. I couldn't believe that they had that. So I grabbed one of those for her. Yeah.
Remember when I did my Badajoz box?
Uh-huh.
You know, so I had a lot of British figures scaling the walls, assaulting Badajoz by ladder. And, you know, I needed brown besses and I needed those shakos. And because they were different. The Brit shako changed several times. And I don't think Airfix, I don't think Hysterex had the right one. And I went in there one day.
They never had the stovepipe one, right? It was the stove.
They didn't have the stovepipe one, right. Right, and I went in to American Science and Surplus, and they had 50 Brit soldier Airfix kits.
Wow.
The 132nd ones. I bought like 49 of them.
Yeah.
I figured I'd leave. They were a dollar, you know. I just figured I'd leave one. I needed canteens, too. So I got three things out of each kit that I needed, and I left one for the next person to be lucky.
Yeah. Well, I have done that with Hysterex for so long that I think I could be a Hysterex parts dealer now. I have so many Hysterex parts, you wouldn't believe. But
I thought so, but I'm doing, just for fun, a box trying to use as much Hysterex as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sculpting a lot of legs and arms so you don't have that stiffness.
Yeah.
And, you know, and also... because it's a box, you won't see the back of the figures. So I'm shaving down those torsos. I don't know why Hysterex seemed to think everyone in the French army had very skinny arms, but barrel-chested torsos.
Yeah, I don't know if it has something to do with the way they engraved them into the steel blocks by hand or what, but
I'm not sure.
The proportions are odd.
The proportions are odd. So I've been fixing those things, right? So I needed a particular aide-de-camp torso, and... you know, I've got 100 torsos, none of that piece. And then I inherited a big old sloppy box of Shep stuff, and he had a bunch of stuff and none of that. And so I said, hey, Joe, you got Hysterex? And Joe comes over with two filing boxes, you know, the banker's boxes full of Hysterex.
Yeah.
Right? And that piece wasn't in there either.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, damn it, I'm just going to sculpt it.
Yeah, I'm sure there are some pieces like that I don't have, but there aren't many. I don't think there are many Hysterex pieces I do not have downstairs.
Well, next time I'm turning to you then, and you can put it in a little envelope and ship it from Salt Lake City.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked at all if I had that piece.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening. This has been a fun one, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as Mr. Biediger and I did.
Yep, thanks for listening.
I'm going to search for a biology dissection program.
Okay.